first of all, let you know that we could go on pause if necessary. I'll post the archive after we finish, so there's no live audience. We can relax. We can take a break at any time. And I have a new dog, so you might hear a little dog noises in the background. Let's start out general terms. What is the focus of your research right now?
Oh, on this this fake shooting in Florida.
A fake
shooting. Oh, yeah.
So do you think no one was killed?
Probably.
Well, that's good news, right?
Yes, that's right. We ought to be overjoyed.
So it's another Sandy Hook type scenario?
Yep. In a long tradition here. Thanks to Barack Obama, who introduced all of this back in 2013.
So how did Obama kind of build this stage? I mean, what's going on here? Why are these shootings happening?
Well, Mark, don't you want to have that as a part of the recording?
We are recording live right now.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I would have been a little more formal then in approaching it because, I mean, the signs are multitudinous. We have an Instagram of the alleged shooter wearing a Great America hat again. I mean, this is just ridiculous. So this is supposed to be lampooning Donald Trump and his efforts to make America great again. That's what he means by having a shooter come in and shoot up a bunch of kids. It's about 35 miles away from Mar-a-Lago, as they say in real estate, location, location, location. So this is clearly intended to put attention on Trump, to focus on him as though he were responsible for any of these shootings, being a relatively new president of the United States, where they've been going on for quite a long time. The timing is very significant because it's distracting from the failure of the Russiagate intervention, where we even have today .com reasserting that, in fact, the whole thing was not a hack at all, but it was a download directly from the DNC server and Kim.com. And we knew that from veteran intelligence professionals for Sanity. And we know that with all this falling apart, there being nothing to the Russian meddling meme, which actually two investigative journalists blew apart in early 2017 with their book Shattered, when they reported that Robbie Mook and John Podesta had introduced the very idea, made out a whole cloth to obfuscate Hillary's incompetent campaign, to distract attention from the Pizzagate revelations coming out of WikiLeaks that led directly to John Podesta as pedophile-in-chief, and to obfuscate Hillary's own involvement with Russia, which involves selling 20% of American uranium reserves to Russia for $145 million contribution to the Clinton Foundation, which required the approval of Barack Obama. I mean, pause and think about it. If Julius and Ethel Rosenberg received the electric chair for selling atomic secrets to the then Soviet Union, what do Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama deserve for selling off 20% of U.S. uranium reserves? They try to promote gun control by shock and awe by having these events, but I mean, I've been studying one after another, and they're totally fraudulent. I have investigated as many as 10 of these events, beginning with Sandy Hook. The Boston bombing, of course, is not in precisely the same mode, but it's another faked event where they actually used amputee actors. At Sandy Hook, we even have the FEMA manual for the two-day exercise. We know how they faked the kids using photographs of older kids when they were younger. In San Bernardino, we have the Craigslist ad for good pay, transportation, food, some speaking roles, call date December 1st, going live December 2nd. Umpqua College in Oregon, that was just ridiculous. You had kids in pink shirts that were pretending to be, EMTs. I mean, just silly. Orlando, The club wasn't even open. The permit for the club had expired 3 years in advance. It was a closed building. It had a legal occupancy of 150. It had only 11 parking spaces, which weren't even being used the night of the alleged attack. So you should have had, if there were over 300 people crammed into the building, abandoned vehicles all over the place, but they weren't there because the whole thing was totally fraudulent. You had very amateurish crisis actors carrying one another even toward the building when it ought to have been away from the building. I have a correspondent who resides in the area wrote to tell me it wasn't even a gay club.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Orlando Emergency Medical Center declared they weren't going to bill. When was the last time you heard a hospital not charging for a Band-Aid? It's because they would have been guilty of fraud. They didn't have to treat anyone because there wasn't any offense. Then they put out two really absurd Dance Orlando Dance videos with the actors and actresses as doctors and nurses on the one hand, as policemen and policewomen on the other, to try to make Orlando sound like a tempting place for visitors again. Dallas was so fraudulent that they used a Photoshopped image of police officers beside a wall. It looked like a very high wall, but in fact, it's actually a very low wall. They had to blow it up and introduce the figures of the officers when you do a close-up. They have orange blank adapters on their weapons, which means they cannot have even fired real bullets. We had Charlottesville, which was an elaborate production in three different acts where the governor of the state, Kerry McAuliffe, who's a buddy of Hillary Clinton, was a director, or the mayor of the city, Signer, had the Charlottesville police stand down so the governor could use the state police to channel the peaceful protesters into a violent confrontation with Antifa and Black Lives Matter members who'd been bussed in by George Soros just for the occasion. Then you had an automobile wreck where it's supposed to be the case that a zealot drove into a crowd of protesters and killed one, but the whole thing was fabricated. They had two different cars, two different drivers, as many as three different takes, equaling totally fake. The woman who claimed to have died there, Heather Heyer, didn't die until the following day of a heart attack, not from being hit by the police. The driver was not the 20-year-old Patsy who was supposed to be diagnosed as a schizophrenic, but a 32-year-old military veteran who commands a brigade in Ohio. You had three different vehicles arranged there, were sitting there without any drivers for about 5 minutes before it comes along and smashes into the back to create a scene. But then they had the Photoshop stuntmen flying through the air because nothing like that occurred. We got Las Vegas, which is maybe the greatest absurdity of them all. They were using a pre-recorded soundtrack being played over the PA system that had a recording, a very high-quality recording of actual machine gun fire and bullets hitting.
Yeah. No one was killed in Las Vegas either?
Nope.
Amazing.
Yeah. In fact, we had clues right off the bat because we had I had a Facebook friend who contacted the three closest hospitals to the concert area and asked if they'd had any gunshot admittees, and they all three admitted no, they'd had no one admitted with a gunshot wound. And one of them said, "You must be calling about the drill," but that was only drill. No one was harmed.
And they said that at the hospital.
Yeah. Not Amazing. Only that, but she gave the phone numbers, and I called them up and talked to them myself, and two of them confirmed the same thing, and the third one just said no comment, to which I replied, I take that as a no. We've been doing research on the obituaries, and they turn out to be for people who died in different states or on different dates or from different causes of death. I mean, it's ridiculous. We have photographs of them transferring three bodies from a funeral home hearse into an ambulance to be presented as victims of the Las Vegas shooting. We have Intel Hub thought they'd scored a coup because they found 17 ambulances in front of Hooters. So they thought there'd been a mini massacre at Hooters, but we have footage inside Hooters where you have a lot of bored crisis actors sitting around each with their own sheet, waiting to be taken out on a stretcher as another victim.
Wow.
The sheriff originally explained it couldn't just be the work of one man because the lobbies of three different hotels and casinos, the Bellagio, the Flamingo, and New York, were all shot out. We have, in fact, in coordination with the pre-recorded soundtrack, they had special visual effects for in the middle of the Mandalay Bay on the fourth floor. You had flashing lights to simulate a machine gun. Then above it, you had three light blasts coming out to simulate American military weapons. We even have a video of a guy in the crowd turning to fire on the crowd. You can see the light from his muzzle blast, but there's no impact of any bullets because he was firing blanks. We've gone through 33 videos, and you hear lots of sounds of shots, but there's no one being shot. We even have a new video that turns up where one of the crisis directors comes out and has this couple there redo their scene to make it look more authentic. And you even hear the director saying, don't film this, don't film this. And it's embarrassingly bad, Mark. It's just embarrassingly bad. Well, and when you stop and think about it, you see, Crowds on Demand was recruiting for the Las Vegas events 15 days in advance. So they had seeded the crowd with crisis actors. I would guess maybe as many as 500. And they were waiting for the cue when they should start respond by screaming bullets, blood, and all that. It turns out that Dan Cromer, who's a very sophisticated guy with audio and video and was the first to point out to me that they use the pre-recorded soundtrack, has gone back and listened to the recording of the entire concert. And it turns out you can hear very faintly in the background early on the sound of these this machine gun firing. But it wasn't loud enough for the crisis actors to pick up on it. Now, bear in mind, if it had been real, there would have been people hit with the bullets because you can hear the sound of the machine gun, but there's no reaction at all until they turn up the volume. And when they turn up the volume, then the crisis actors can hear the sounds and start reacting, yelling and screaming. But it's a joke. I mean, it's just a joke. Yeah, we have photographs of police hiding behind a police car, but there's civilians there. One guy's on his cell phone, another's doing his iPod. They're not the least bit concerned because they know the whole thing is fake.
Well, I'm of the opinion that the deep state in our country has been taken over by traitors who are creating these staged events. And the shootings, I believe, are designed to create a situation where the deep state and the left will take away our right to bear arms and create a situation where the United States can be easily conquered. Do you think I'm a crazy conspiracy theorist?
Well, if you are, I share your concerns. I mean, we have a history, you know. I mean, we emancipated ourselves from England by fighting a war against a tyrant. And we conquered a continent, unfortunately, at the expense of 10 or 20 million Native Americans who were here long before we were. We have a history of citizen soldiers. We have a Second Amendment that matters a great deal to most citizens of the country, and we're not going to give up our guns. I have frequently said when they come for our guns, the time has come to use them. So I believe what's going on here in this Florida thing is an attempt to pivot toward mental health. And when you get deeper into this, you're fine. There's several indications. Not only is this tailor-made, you know, this is a custom-made job for Donald Trump, but that it's an attempt to use criteria of mental health to crack down on the internet, to do preemptive detention so that you can arrest a person and incarcerate him for observation, you know, in an asylum, for example, without them having actually committed any offense. I mean, this is one of the signs of a totalitarian or a Stalinist state, that you can be incarcerated for crimes you haven't even committed. Mm-hmm. But get this, Mark, if you want a key to tell here what's going on. The name of this school was the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Well, she was an American journalist, writer, feminist, and environmentalist from 7 April 1890 to 14 May 1998, known for her staunch defense of the Everglades against efforts to drain it. And then there's a message, is opposition to draining the swamp. I mean, this is directed at Donald Trump. So you got it right, you know, in the vicinity of Mar-a-Lago, and you got it at a timing the Democrats need to change the subject. It's a key Democratic issue, gun control, changes the subject. You're now seeking to activate a bunch of students who don't have any idea which end is up. I mean, you know, when I get deeper into this, you'll discover that the students were told that the police would be doing a fake code red with fake guns. We had a 15-year-old student who's cited by Laura Loomer, who's done a lot of good work on Las Vegas, reporting they were told there'd be an active shooter drill at the school this week, which is why students thought they were participating in a drill when they were being evacuated. Well, the fact is they were participating in a drill. We have a photograph of a National Security Council vehicle on the campus. What in the world is it doing there? We have students reporting there were Army personnel who told them not to look at the bodies, which they moved and hid under mats, no doubt because they were dummies. I mean, they've used mannequins for many of these events, especially, for example, in Nice, France, where this 18-wheeler was supposed to have mowed down 84 people, and yet you inspect the front of the truck and there's no blood whatsoever. And it turns out, take a closer look at the bodies, they used actual bona fide mannequins. In fact, I was so astonished by it that when Ole Domegaard did an article about this for my book about From Orlando to Dallas and Beyond, I put a photo of a couple of the mannequins on the back cover. Then we have Parkland students reporting, and get this, Mark, Secret Service present changed school security policy several weeks before the shooting. What in the world would the Secret Service be doing there? Mm. We have some of these people actually going on with Rachel Maddow, a teacher at the school, told Rachel that she and other staff were told at the beginning of the semester that an active shooting drill would be taking place sometime during this semester, but that it would be unannounced. You have an Intel Hub doing a survey. Why would the Secret Service have changed security protocols at the Stoneman Douglas High School unannounced to teachers and staff just weeks before the shooting? 61% reported they were in on it, 32% they had foreknowledge, 7% just a coincidence. How can it be a coincidence? Now we have a brand new video, Mark, I discovered just before coming on with you right now tonight. Security camera on freshman building entrance removed in advance of Parkland false flag.
I heard the shooter, Nicholas Cruz, called himself the school shooter for like 2 years before this happened. Is that true?
Well, there's some tweets or whatever where he refers to himself as being a professional school shooter. But, of course, that would imply that he was being paid. His foster parents said he was a good kid. In fact, they had rules at the house. He adhered to all the rules. He didn't misbehave, you know. This all seems quite bizarre, but I got to tell you, Mark, the sheriff appears to be playing a crucial role here. This is a very, very odd case. Just a little background leading up to the sheriff, who campaigned on the ground that he was a Jew and cited the Talmud as a reason to elect him the sheriff. We had a report from Haaretz, which, of course, is a newspaper in Israel. Florida shooter Nicholas Cruz trained with white supremacists, at least four Jews among those killed. Now, I've done a lot of review of a lot of these shootings, and I've never heard any identification of those who were killed as Jews before, or even by their ethnic origins or religious orientation. I mean, this is very peculiar. Not only that, but we get a subsequent report that that was a false claim, that there was no white nationalist ties to Florida high school shooter. This thing about saying how four Jews were among those killed, to me, is very reminiscent of 9/11, when between the collapse, or the really, since it didn't collapse, the destruction of the South Tower and of the North, they broadcast video footage of Palestinians rejoicing as though the Palestinians were supposed to be taking pleasure or happiness at what was going on. In fact, the Palestinians were just as stunned and slack-jawed as the rest of the world. It was archival footage that they just happened to have at hand to broadcast nationwide with this one of the world's largest viewing audiences. They were also reporting that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine had claimed responsibility. All of this was completely absurd. 9/11 was a very high-tech op. Intel analysts agree. There were really only two agencies that could have pulled it off, namely the CIA and the Mossad. And on 9/11, they were working in collusion. They were working together. The whole idea behind 9/11 to create a motivation for drawing the United States into the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region. In other words, 9/11 was set up to get the U.S. to expand its treasury and its young people and its military to benefit Israel and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran. It hasn't played out that way because of the intervention of Russia and Iran on behalf of Syria, where most Americans, you know, still believe this poppycock about we're out there for freedom and democracy. Bashar al-Assad is a democratically elected president of Syria. He enjoys a popularity of 80% of the Syrian people. We're not there for democracy. We're there to destroy democracy. We're there to benefit Israel. It's all total bullshit, Mark.
Let me throw in a question along those lines. Do you think that Trump is being controlled by the Zionists? What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm worried about this because, you know, when he went and spoke before AIPAC, of course, he gave this unbelievably strong endorsement of Israel and said he'd be the strongest president for Israel. Of course, the idea of claiming we're moving the American embassy to Jerusalem, I condemned on an international news program. I thought that was so obscene. It's had the effect of taking the U.S. out of any negotiating roles between the Israel and the Palestinians, where the Israelis, of course, have been slaughtering the Palestinians from the beginning of the creation of the nation of Israel, where if you look at a map at the amount of territory controlled by the Palestinians since 1947-48, it has shrunk by more than 90%. In other words, the Palestinians only now today control about 10%, actually even less, of the land that was theirs originally that the Israelis had usurped. I was interviewed yesterday by Press TV. This is the Iranian news service, about how four of Bibi Netanyahu's closest allies have been arrested on corruption charges, and how it looks as though it's getting closer to his being arrested, where the debate remains about whether he can continue to serve as prime minister if he's under indictment. But where I observe that the game plan for the Israelis remains the same as before, namely their final solution is to load all the Palestinians aboard a ship, float it out to sea, and sink it. Israel has been a great violator of human rights. The idea that Donald Trump should be supporting Israel is, in my opinion, an obscenity. In fact, the U.S. foreign policy guidelines declare that the United States cannot provide foreign aid to any nation that has undeclared weapons of mass destruction. Well, Israel has vast arsenals of nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons it's never declared. Israel regularly violates United Nations resolutions. The United States frequently vetoes anything that would be significant as a form of condemnation of Israeli behavior, no matter how outrageous. Reading the book Fire and Fury, I was very much impressed with the extent to which Trump's foreign policy is very much an Israeli foreign policy, and that troubles me immensely because the principal reason I supported him, though I could never have voted for Hillary Clinton and the Clinton crime syndicate, where, I mean, the corruption of Hillary is beyond belief. But because Trump declared that we were wrong to be in the Middle East, that we ought to get our forces out, that we ought to reallocate the $4.5 or $5 trillion we'd expended there on our infrastructure, our schools here at home. In fact, that appears to have been the issue that decided the election, where a study done by Boston University, the University of Minnesota, determined that the election hinged on the voters in rural counties in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, who had suffered lots of casualties from the wars in the Middle East, and judged that Trump was the less likely of the two to continue the wars.
Right.
So that, you know, that he sent more troops into Afghanistan, that we're still fighting some kind of rear guard action in Syria. There was an article in the Wisconsin State Journal this morning that we're starting to draw down our forces in Iraq. But, I mean, you know, I'm very troubled by the idea that Trump may be under the control of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, Mark, this whole thing in Florida, for example, seems to be an Israeli op. This is, really? Is a Zionist op. This is a Jewish op. And the point I'm making about the four Jews having been killed is it's overreaching. It's like showing the images of the Palestinians. This is like framing Sirhan Sirhan, who just happened to be a Palestinian, for the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. He was actually shot by the security guard who was holding his right arm, a guy named Caesar, who actually shot Bobby behind the right ear with the same type of revolver that Sirhan had, but from the distance of an inch and a half. And as Bobby was falling, fired three more shots at him, two of which actually entered under the armpit, and one narrowly missed his heart. But the fact is, as Bobby was falling, he grabbed the tie of the security guard, so that in photographs of him lying on the pantry floor, if you look carefully, you can see this tie clasp, and you have to ask yourself, what in the world is that doing there? It was Bobby identifying his own killer. So that, this was a CIA LAPD op against Bobby Kennedy, one of his own people, whom I suspect was Frank Mankiewicz, actually led him from the podium into the pantry. He was supposed to exit out of the general ballroom, but it was setting him up for the hit. And, of course, that would be because Israel wasn't any more happy with Bobby than they were with Jack, where I have no doubt that Israel played a role there, though primarily the taking out of JFK was Lyndon Baines all the way with LBJ op, where Lyndon had forced himself on the ticket in Los Angeles in 1960 in order to have Jack taken out so he would accede to the presidency. In fact, he even sent his chief administrative assistant, Cliff Carter, down to Dallas to make sure all the arrangements were in place for the assassination.
Well, let me ask you another question. Do you think we are headed for a civil war in America?
Well, I sure would not want to see that. I do believe we've never had an example of a losing political party in an American election that has fought tooth and nail and fabricated all kinds of phony reasons why to undermine the legitimacy of the incoming administration. And it turns out that the corruption of the FBI and the Department of Justice in this case has been simply profound. You had the highest ranking officials of the FBI involved in collusion against Trump, using a fabricated dossier they knew was a fake. You had Andrew McCabe, you had James Comey, you had this guy, Peter Strzok, his girlfriend, Lisa Page. You had other corrupt members of the Department of Justice, Loretta Lynch, for crying out loud, meets with Bill Clinton so they can stifle, the revelations about Hillary's corrupt acts in relation to her email server, which were blatant. This guy, Peter Strzok, was allowed to revise a James Comey statement from, egregious behavior that would have qualified for prosecution to extreme reckless, which didn't. I mean, they were cutting all kinds of corners, giving her all kinds of slack, totally improperly, for all kinds of grotesque reasons, not even beginning to approach the fact that the DNC had deliberately sabotaged Bernie Sanders' campaign. They gave Hillary 13 primaries that Bernie had legitimately won to guarantee she would be the candidate. And I'll tell you, Mark, irony of ironies, I am personally of the opinion that had they only allowed Bernie the nomination that he in fact had earned, that he would have been elected president of the United States over Donald Trump. Wow. And my argument is the following. There was an overlap in their foreign policy, which was by far Trump's greatest strength. Especially in comparison with Hillary, but not in comparison with Bernie, whereas Bernie's domestic program, including, single payer, really expanding Medicare for everyone, which is the obvious solution to our health care problem. We already have the bureaucracy in place. It was originally designed to be expanded to all segments of society. That's the thing to do. We're the only modern industrialized nation in the world that doesn't provide health care for all of its citizens. In order for big pharma and big medicine to make vast profits at the expense of the American people, where they have to choose between their life and their wallet, just to remain alive in the face of exorbitant medical expenses. And Bernie, of course, supports Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment insurance, all those programs that actually make a difference in the life of Americans. I think that if he had accepted the invitation of Jill Stein to run with her as the head of the Green Party ticket, that they, in fact, would have won, and we would have, you know, been done with the two-party system, which has actually turned out to be highly deleterious to the general welfare of the American people.
How do you, I think students in colleges have changed since you were teaching. Do you think they've moved farther to the left?
No, I think they've become less competent. They're less socially interested. This whole thing is fabricated. You know, they may even be paying these students. I mean, this is the kind of thing these people do. They're apathetic. These are television creatures. They lead lives of passivity. They have been raised on television, which is a great soporific. In fact, it turns out that brain activity, watching television, is lower than when you're in deep sleep. I mean, it's that bad. And, of course, it's the greatest instrument of propaganda the world has ever known. So that since the CIA began infiltrating the media back in the 1950s and what's known as Operation Mockingbird, the situation has gone dramatically downhill. It was so bad already in 1975 that William Colby, who was then the head of the agency, testified to Congress that the CIA owned anyone of significance in the media at the time. That they've become panic-stricken over the alternative media because it's demonstrated such power, for example, cracking the Boston Marathon bombing already the day of the event by identifying the Kraft International personnel wearing khaki trousers, black jackets, black baseball caps with a skull insignia where the motto of Kraft is violence does solve problems. We got two of these guys heading toward the location where one of the bombs explodes is wearing a black nylon backpack with a white square. The bomb that explodes is in a black nylon backpack with a white square. Then he's rushing away, no longer wearing the black nylon backpack with a white square. It was so bad that they actually photoshopped the images of the brothers into the marathon. I learned this from their aunt, who pointed out to me that had happened, and I asked how she knew, and she said because Tamerlan, the older brother, was shown as clean-shaven when he had a beard. And I asked, could she prove it? And she started sending me photos of him lying in bed with his cat. He's got a beard, a link to them working out in a gymnasium. He's got a beard. He was contacted by friends the day of the marathon, relieved to find they'd been nowhere in the vicinity. They had dinner together. He had a beard. There's convenience store footage with Zocher inside and Tamerlan out. He's got a beard. He's arrested in Watertown, stripped naked, put in the back of a police car. He's got a beard. I could identify him, but it's nice that his aunt and his mother identified him. Then he turns up dead with a huge gash in the side, and he's still got his beard. The claim is made that Zocher, the younger brother, had killed him, presumably inadvertently, but that makes no sense at all. Once he's in the custody of the police, how could Zocher have possibly killed his brother? He couldn't. And in fact, we have a witness reporting. She watched the police drive over Tamerlan three times with a black SUV, which appears to have been his own vehicle. Mark, is that bad?
It's horrible. Do you have any thoughts on the launch of the Falcon Heavy? I was quite impressed with how those two booster rockets separated and came down individually to land. Did you get a chance to see that?
Mark, that was pure animation. I mean, it was absolutely stunning. They took a comic book, the idea of this roadster into space.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, isn't that strange?
Mark, it was a joke.
The
whole thing. This was a litmus test to measure the gullibility of the American public. Just
so
a joke.
Actual, you know, Elon Musk has allegedly been working on this technology to be able to land the rocket that way. You're saying that's all total.
I'm telling you how it looked to me. It looked to me totally fake.
Wow.
Now that they sent up this rocket with the three combination, you know, rockets. Okay, I can buy that. Mm-hmm. And we have images of it flying out over the Atlantic Ocean. But the way those came back down, no, I tell you, that was animation. Disney could not have done it better.
You know, the roadster in space looked really strange to me.
Yes! It's a comic book, Mark. It's a comic book. I mean, this is so insulting to the intelligence of the average American who has no idea anymore. And because so much of what they're being told over the mainstream media is all from the same script. I mean, you got families who have a hard enough time, you know, keeping food on the table and a roof over their head. And if they hear the same story from, say, NBC or CNN and some other network, they think it's real. They don't understand the extent to which the agencies have dominated the networks. There are CIA representatives at every newspaper and TV station in the country. They filter everything that goes out. It's all coordinated, and 90% of it is propaganda and bears scant relation to the truth.
So where do you think they're going to go with this? Because Elon Musk is making all these claims about being able to get to Mars and all this.
We can't get to Mars with what? With an unmanned probe? Or is
no,
he
going- no, no, no. He's saying with the next version of the Falcon Heavy, we'll be able to go to Mars.
Mark, it's just absurd. I mean, look at it this way. We had a couple of years ago a NASA spokesman that was acknowledging that the greatest obstacle to a manned mission to Mars was the Van Allen radiation belt. Well, the Van Allen radiation belt was created when Earth was created about 4.5 billion years ago. If it's a problem today, it was a problem in 1969, 70. We never went to the moon. I've done a lot about the moon landing hoax. We didn't have the propulsion power to escape Earth's low Earth orbit. We didn't have the computer capability. I mean, a little handheld computer is more capability than when he had available in 1969-70 for these moon missions.
Let me throw another question. How much power would it take to transmit from the moon? They transmitted alleged films.
I love it.
I mean, how could they do that?
I love it. I'll tell you. You know, we have all these photographs from the moon. Frankly, I don't even believe it would be possible to take photographs on the moon because I believe cosmic rays would destroy the photographic plate. And all these photographs for these cameras that were mounted external to the spacesuits where the astronauts couldn't even frame or focus them are perfectly formatted. They're perfectly aligned. I mean, it's just stunning and incredibly improbable. I have a colleague, Jack White, who became interested in the moon landing issue after doing brilliant work on JFK. And he did a calculation, the total number of photographs taken on the moon purportedly and the total amount of time available to take them. It was like it averaged out taking a photograph every 52 seconds as though you were doing nothing else but taking these photographs, each of which was perfectly framed. You have some photographs. It's a good question of whether the dust on the moon would hold the imprint of a tire or a boot print.
Right.
And they're impaled either way because it does or it doesn't. My frank opinion is it's like dust in the Sahara, sand in the Sahara. That dust on the moon would no more retain a boot print than would the sand of the Sahara. And yet we have photographs showing these boot prints in the lunar dust, which is bereft of any water. I mean, a water content that tends to create impressions and for mud or dirt or whatever, you know. But we also have moon rovers with no tracks in front or behind or in the middle. Well, how'd they get there? Of course, they appear to have been lowered down by a crane. There's all kinds of nonsense related. We have intersecting shadows. There's only supposed to be one source, namely the sun. You have reflections. You have well-lighted areas behind the lander when it should be in the dark because the sun's on the opposite side, implying multiple sources of light. The whole thing is totally fraudulent. Here's the whopper to me. Well, two additional stories that I think sealed the deal. One is this. They discovered a treasure trove of moon landing footage in a basement of a home of a former NASA official in Florida.
Really?
And what did they? Yeah. And what did they do? I mean, this would be the most precious footage ever taken by the hand of man. They destroyed it, and of course they destroyed it because modern technology would have revealed it was all fake. But get this, NASA, and this was about 18 months ago, put out a $20,000 honorarium for assistance in solving their space poop problem. that presently with space diapers, they could handle like 14 hours of human excrement, but that they needed to go much longer. In fact, you stop and think about it, the missions to the moon took 7 or 8 days, which means the whole story was nothing but a gigantic pile of space poop.
And the spacesuits, if they're that good at, you know, keeping the radiation out, couldn't we clean up Fukushima?
Oh, yeah, it's all ridiculous. Every aspect of it. I've been doing programs with a group of students in Canada, and one of them was about the moon landing. And they actually went to the Space Museum in Washington, D.C., and reporting on the flimsy character of the moon lander. I mean, it's just different colors of tinfoil, on a structure that couldn't possibly have survived a takeoff or a landing. In fact, that's another point. When you have the landing taking place, there's no blowing away of the dust. There's no crater beneath the lander. There's no dust on the pads of the legs. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You can go on and on and on. I've done multiple interviews about the moon landing with Dennis Camino, who is the leading electronics troubleshooter for the Navy before he left and went to work for Raytheon. And we just go through them one after another. Now, they're temporarily unavailable because YouTube has been taking down so many videos that one site, which has so many of mine, has taken them down to relocate them where YouTube can't get at them so that they're temporarily unavailable. But get this, Mark. I was out in Portland and Seattle first weekend in February. On the 3rd, a Friday, I spoke in Portland about false flags on five fronts. I talked about the latest research on Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Charlottesville, Las Vegas, and then even some surprising new information about JFK, because we've discovered now, after all these years, that very famous autopsy photographs published in a book by Robert Grodin entitled The Killing of a President aren't even of the body of JFK. They aren't even of the body of JFK. I mean, how bad is that? So I spoke in Portland on Friday. On Saturday, I gave a presentation in the morning on JFK. In the afternoon, I participated in a conference about Saudi Arabia and the situation in the Middle East. But then on Sunday, I gave a reprise of the false flags on five fronts. Well, the one of those who'd arranged my talk put it up on YouTube, and it was immediately taken down. This video has been removed for violating YouTube's policy on violent or graphic content.
What?
Except there isn't any violent or graphic content.
Exactly.
So when we got other versions available, I had them put up on BitChute, which can't be taken down by YouTube. That's BitChute. So this one is entitled False Flags on Five Fronts from Portland. And would you believe that there's even a warning on this on the BitChute on false flags from five fronts, so one from Portland. It says this video has been marked as not safe for work. NSFW, it is not recommended you view this in work environments or other environments. Get that. So when they put up a second one from Seattle, which was longer because it included some discussion before we had to vacate the premises, again, false flags on five fronts, it got an even more ominous warning, Mark. It says, this video has been marked as not safe for life, NSFW. How ridiculous. It contains graphic content that most people will find upsetting, and it is recommended that you view with extreme caution. Complete nonsense. There's nothing there that's remotely upsetting. And I say, if you want a proof of the absurdity of the situation, the forms of censorship to which we're being subjected, check out False Flags on Five Fronts. There are minor variations between them. But the fact is, you'll see, these kinds of warning labels have no place whatsoever. Turns out, by the way, to just make a few more points about this sheriff, he's been calling for the power to detain individuals over the social media if there's something there that is found troubling, that they're supposed to be subjected to involuntary mental health screening, even put in solitary detention in asylums. This is the a sheriff who campaigned on being a Jew and cited the Talmud as a basis where, for those who are familiar, the Talmud declares that the Jews are the superior race. All the other races exist only to serve the Jews. That if you're a Jew, you're entitled to lie to the Goyim and deceive them and mislead them for the benefit of the Jews. The Saker, who is absolutely brilliant, has now published a brand new article, just showed up today. Sheriff Scott Israel, confirmed liar and manipulator. This is a key player in the whole event. We got a video from a funeral, and guess what? You may have heard about the heroic coach who was supposed to have given his life, right? Well, we got video of him attending the funeral. This is like from Sandy Hook. We had James Mattioli, who was one of the victims who attended his own funeral. He just couldn't resist. He just couldn't stay away. Then we have photographs of the Broward County sheriff who pals around with Hillary Clinton and with Joe Biden. I mean, this is disgusting beyond belief. This is all shows the whole thing is a complete political setup from beginning to end. The Joe Biden thing is rather interesting for the following reason. We get additional confirmations from unexpected sources about the hoax at Sandy Hook, for example, that nobody died there. And a relatively recent one showed up. With a comment on one of my blogs from someone who said they've been listening to this Greater Boston radio program. This was like in November of 2012. And they were featuring the mayor of Boston, who was boasting how he was a buddy with Joe Biden and how Joe Biden had explained that gun control in the USA would be a done deal by January of 2013. Well, Andy Rooney's daughter was incredulous. What could possibly happen to cause legislation to pass so fast? The mayor was coy and wouldn't allow what he was talking about, but obviously he had advanced knowledge of Sandy Hook because it was a Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Eric Holder, Daniel Malloy, Connecticut State Police, Newtown School Board, Fake Families production, where would you believe, Mark? That sympathetic but gullible Americans contributed between $27 and $130 million in donations to the surviving families. 26, that's more than $1 million apiece in their pocket for faking having lost children at Sandy Hook. Wow. And if you go to the false flags on five fronts, you'll show I not only demonstrate how Noah Posner was fabricated out of photographs of his older stepbrother, Michael Vabner, when he was a kid, but how Wolfgang Halbig has produced a photograph of eight of the girls, now, you know, teenagers, I'd say 17, 18 years old. I mean, they were, you know, this is with the photographs that were used to portray them when they were kids. He's even got another photograph where it appears that you have Michael Vabner again in another photograph. Wolfgang says he's got affidavits from three of the kids who want to come forward and expose the whole hoax because they want to regain control of their life. Let me just tell you again how much this was some kind of Zio or Israeli or Jewish op here down in Florida. We had an interview that was on one of the morning shows with Samantha. What is it, Samantha Parrish? She used to be on with Matt Lauer, who got the boot because of alleged sexual impropriety. And they're interviewing this girl who claims she was actually shot, but she shows no symptoms of having been shot whatsoever. Believe it or not, she says she was in Holocaust class when the guns went off. In Holocaust class. And then she goes through and gives all this nonsense about the shooter and how he actually fired into the room. And one of her friends said, grab a book. And she picked up a little tiny book, and it helped to deflect a bullet so she wasn't injured by Holocaust. And the acting is pathetic. I mean, how stupid, how dumb are we supposed to be, Mark?
That's incredible. That's just incredible. You know, when you think about, you know, the number of people that are allegedly shot per year, I don't know, maybe it's 10,000, let's just say. That's not very many people. If you look, for example, at World War II, allegedly 50 to 80 million, some people will say, died in World War II, and no one's talking about disarming the militaries of the world. Why not disarm the militaries of the world if you're really worried about people dying? Because much more people die in war than are You know what I'm saying?
It's great you raise that, because I had several other experiences accumulating evidence in this case. CNN brought in three students to talk about the aftermath of the shooting. And before they interviewed him, the host, and I think it was this Don Lemon fellow, said he had a letter from one of the students, and the letter said that he had heard the sound of gunshots in the hallway, but he had not heard the sound of mental illness. This, of course, is to somehow debunk Donald Trump. I spent 35 years in higher education. I don't know of a single student who'd ever write a letter like that. It's so incredibly stupid. But they had these three students on, and he was questioning the students, and the second student was saying, well, it's obvious that we need more security guards. And boy, the anchor didn't like that. He wanted to divert it. No, and having more security. In other words, that the solution is to have more guns, not less guns.
Yeah.
I stop and think about it, Mark. When you take the guns away from law-abiding citizens, the only parties who are going to have the guns are the criminals.
Sure.
I mean, it turns out that the average response time for police to a 911 call is on the order of 20 minutes. I mean, it's that long. And yet the mayhem tends to take place in the first 5 or 6 minutes. So if you're going to count on the police and you're calling them because they have weapons to come and protect you because you can't protect yourself, it may be that in the interim that your daughter is raped, your wife is murdered, you've been mugged. I mean, it's ridiculous. I had a conversation a day or two ago with an interesting suggestion that, you know, there are a lot of veterans around who are unemployed. They have an excellent background, military training, familiarity with weapons. Why not hire three vets for roving security guards at these different schools to enhance security? Because leaving them all as gun-free zones is just an invitation to disaster. I mean, ask yourself, would you want to put a sign out in front of your home that says gun-free zones?
No, definitely not.
The potential bad guys can enter your home knowing at the very least you're not going to encounter any serious resistance because you're unarmed. I mean, the stupidity. So the left wing, in my opinion, has gone bananas. They've gone right over the cliff on this gun control business. We actually do need more weapons rather than fewer. There have been experiments conducted in communities where, on the one hand, every member of the community was required to have a weapon, and in the other, there was no particular method employed. In a community where everyone had a weapon, the rate of crime went to practically zero. In fact, we have studies done. I even included one in the very first edition of Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which you can download for free as a PDF. Just go to your browser and put in Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. You'll be able to download it. And as Appendix D, as I recall, was a study of the relationship between gun control and homicide. And it's very clear historic patterns that when guns are taken away, the homicide rate goes up. I mean, the NRA nailed this, 40, 50 years ago when they said when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. I mean, that drives home an important point. Why should you take weapons away from law-abiding citizens when you're not going to be able to take them away from the parties you would like to remove them from control? You can't do it. They're criminals because they don't obey the law. In fact, we have plenty of laws on the books. It even turns out that there's much discussion now that the FBI was repeatedly notified that this kid was a risk, and he just fell through the cracks. Well, that suggests we don't need anything special here. We just need to have enforcement and more active implementation of policies already in the books. And you heard me report now that they actually took down a security camera from the freshman dorm before the event. I mean, this whole thing was a setup. So what are we supposed to do when you have an artificially contrived event that wasn't a bona fide event, but they want us to treat it as though it was a bona fide event? They're playing us for saps, Mark. They're playing us for saps.
So no one was killed at this Florida shooting. No one was killed at Sandy Hook. And no one was killed at Las Vegas either.
I can guarantee you all of the above. I'll give you this caveat, however. Here in Florida, could they have killed somebody? I think it's highly unlikely that anyone was killed. Here are a couple of reasons. One is we have an interview with a student who said she was having a conversation with the alleged shooter, and she could hear firing in the background, which would, you know, doesn't make it sound like he was doing the firing because he was there talking with her at the time.
Right.
Here's another. CNN played a video clip, and you could hear the shooting very distinctly. In fact, too clearly, too distinctly. It was like it was right in my ear. And that suggested to me they were using, once again, a pre-recorded soundtrack, just as they did in Las Vegas. I guarantee you, no one died in Las Vegas. No one died in Sandy Hook. No one died at the Boston bombing. No one died in Orlando. No one died in Charlottesville. These were all contrived and arranged. These are political stunts to benefit the Democratic Party, the Democratic political agenda, which is very highly focused on gun control these days. And to change the subject from the abject failure of the Russian hacking meme, whereas I already mentioned, Kim.com already today was reaffirming that there was no hack, that it was downloaded directly from the server. It all appears to have been done by Seth Rich, who was an IT guy for the DNC, was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and who was disillusioned by sabotaging Bernie's campaign. Well, they tried to kill him in retaliation. He appears to have given them to Julian Assange by way of Craig Murray, who is a UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, the head of a college, an intel analyst. They both have affirmed they know the leaker, that it wasn't hacking and he wasn't Russian, and, you know... John Podesta is reported to have wanted somebody they suspected of leaking taken out to set an example. He wasn't too particular about the strength of the evidence. That appears to have been what happened to Seth Rich, who did not die on the street, but actually at Washington Hospital Center, where we got a report from a fourth-year resident about how they treated him for non-life-threatening wounds. He was moved to intensive care. Everything looked fine until they were surrounded by law enforcement officers who cut off medical treatment. And while the resident said he couldn't guarantee that they allowed him to die, I assert categorically that they made sure he didn't get out alive.
Oh, terrible. Absolutely terrible. Well, Jim, I want to thank you for another fantastic show, as always. We've only got about 4 minutes left, so I want you to have the opportunity to tell people about your programs, your radio show, your books, your YouTubes, everything.
Well, thanks, Mark, for that. I enjoy having these conversations with you. I have books where I bring together experts on different aspects of the cases. Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. You can download the original 13 contributors, including 6 current or retired PhD college professors. There's a second edition available at moonrockbooks.com. We have the book, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, which has 4 chapters on the moon landing, 4 more on the death and replacement of Paul McCartney, which for whatever reason draws as an emotional response as the idea that nobody died at Sandy Hook. 2 on the first death of Saddam Hussein, 2 on the second death of Osama bin Laden, 4 about the Holocaust, which is why Amazon banned that book too. So my first 2 books with Amazon were both banned. The ADL just directed Amazon to ban any books that discuss the Holocaust, and Amazon dutifully banned over 200 books. I have another and nobody died in Boston either. That's unbelievably thoroughgoing, including about the trial and how the whole thing was a setup, and where you'll find in this false flags on 5 fronts further confirmation for all the evidence were reported. We have one from Orlando to Dallas and beyond. I've sketched some elements about those. America nuked on 9/11, compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. I have my 4th and most recent book on JFK, Who, How, and Why. And the latest is on political theater in Charlottesville, where I'm working now on a book on Las Vegas, which I hope to have out within a couple of months. As far as my radio shows, I do 2 news reviews every Monday, typically, though this week the second was deferred until Wednesday because it's President's Day. One's called The Goldfish Report with Louisa. That typically runs about an hour and a half. Then I do a 2-hour Truth versus News, spelled capital N-E-W dollar sign, out of a Seattle community TV station. I do regularly The Conspiracy Guy on PRN.FM. That's Gary Knowles' Progressive Radio Network. Those are archived at conspiracyguy.podbean, B-E-A-N, .com. You can find them there. And I do the raw deal Tuesdays and Thursdays for 2 hours from 3 to 5 Central, 4 to 6 Eastern, 1 to 3 Pacific on Studio B at Revolution Radio. Those are the basics. And then I'm doing lots of other interviews like this one with you, Mark, which I so much appreciate.
Well, Dr. Fetzer, keep up all the great work. Thanks for talking to us again, and have a great evening, sir.
My great pleasure, Mark.
Good evening. Bye-bye.